Citizen Kane? No. Godfather? Seen it. Casablanca? No. Raging Bull? No. Singing in the Rain? No. Gone with the Wind? A little bit. Lawrence of Arabia? No. Schindler's List? No. Vertigo? I saw it for 10 minutes. Wizard of Oz? Yeah, I've seen it. City Lights? No. Never heard of it. Searchers? No. Star Wars? Yes. Psycho? No.
Hello and welcome to Haven't Seen It, the podcast where we see movies that we probably should have seen a long time ago and give you our reviews. This is our inaugural podcast, hopefully the first of many, and we'll go ahead and introduce ourselves and then get started. My name is Jen Stansfield and my co-host...
Sean Merrick.
And I am a writer, just moved out to Los Angeles, well, a wannabe writer, agents call me. And Sean?
Well, I'm a writer as well. I'm a media professional, aspiring media professional of many years. And I think that this podcast is crucial because information is everything out here in Hollywood. And since we haven't seen these movies, we need to, I don't know if we can hang with the folks out here. So I think we're doing ourselves a good service.
And hopefully a good service for all of you out there, because let's be honest, there's about 80 bajillion movies out in Hollywood, and most of us haven't seen any of them. And in my case, I haven't seen a lot of the classics, like Casablanca,
Citizen Kane.
Yeah, totally haven't seen it.
And I think that's...
Might be a problem.
And it is a problem, and I think that, you know, this is saying it's a good remedy to the situation to entertain the listeners, so...
Yeah, so we are going to go ahead and get started. For our first... I don't know, the first delve into this lovely attempt at a podcast, we watched One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yes.
Yes, and something that totally goes along with it, Hellraiser.
Yes, yes, we did. We basically took the 100 top movies on the AFI movie list and...
Hellraiser's not on that.
Hellraiser's not on that. It's probably close to it. You know, it's probably in the top 500, I would think. But One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is on there, and we decided to stream it on Netflix and check it out. So,
what'd you think?
I was waiting for it to end, probably in the last 30 minutes.
Yeah, I was with you. For those of you that don't know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is the movie version of the classic book of the same name, starring Jack Nicholson, which he won an Oscar for the role, I believe.
He won an Oscar. Well, it was one of the big... No, it wasn't the last movie, but it was one of the movies that's won, like, the big five. It's won Best Director, Best Screenplay, Actor, Director.
And Actress.
And Actress.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I mean, it's rightfully so.
No, it was good. I just, it's kind of, I don't know, for those of you that don't know, it's set in a mental institution, and Jack Nicholson's character basically is in jail, and he... pretends to be crazy because he thinks it'll be easier to serve his time, serving for statutory rape, by the way, which is fantastic. He thinks it'll be easier to serve in a mental institution, so he fakes being crazy. And then, of course, you go over to the mental institution and you end up with a sex-obsessed and somewhat creepy young Danny DeVito with hair.
Okay. I don't know if he was sex-obsessed,
well,
but he was...
followed him around with those, like, dirty playing cards.
Yeah, but, you know, I think I think Danny DeVito's character is just kind of like a guy that he just wanted to have some friends, you know, even though he's delusional, he's just a little sycophant who just wanted to latch on to something, and, I thought he was actually one of my favorite characters in the movie, because he always had that goofy smile on his face.
I know.
Like, just some of the little quirks about it, it's like, I think that's probably why he's so great. Overall, it's just that he's got that charisma about him that has carried on. So
I just really wanted him to be Frank from Always Sunny and just like started saying things like, "Hey, who's gonna plow?"
They did reference that in an episode, his role in that movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Which episode?
It's one of the fourth season ones, which you know they had.
I should probably know that.
Yeah, I know. You probably should know.
I love that show, and I don't know that.
And the one with Rob Thomas in it as well. But,
okay.
He's really fun in it. And it's actually one of those movies too where you're watching it and you're seeing a lot of people that you say, oh, I've seen that guy before. Of course, Christopher Lloyd, this was his first.
Oh, I have to interject though, really quick before you say one more thing. One of the reasons that we decided to do this podcast is just for what Sean said, that with Always Sunny referencing Danny DeVito's role, so many things reference all these old movies that we've never seen, mm-hmm. so we decided that it might be a good idea.
Well, The Simpsons clearly have referenced and Once Over the Cuckoo's Nest in the past as well, and it's just something that if you're like, you don't want to be caught off guard, you know, by be sitting around and you're watching something on TV and everybody's like, oh man, yeah, I totally get that, you know, and then
you're like, oh, I don't.
And you have to kind of pretend you do that, and you don't want to look like a fool. So I think this was a really smart movie. I think it was a smart movie to watch.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but you were saying Christopher Lloyd was in this movie?
Christopher Lloyd was in this movie.
He did not have Doc Brown hair. Very sad.
Brad Dourif was in this movie, who was notorious for... He's not notorious, but he's a very accomplished actor. He was in, most recently, Halloween 2, the remakes. He was the sheriff in there, but he's also known for his roles in Dune and The X-Files.
You're going to make me watch Dune, aren't you?
We should watch Dune. I mean, I've already seen it, so kind of couldn't do it for this podcast, but I think it would have been a great movie for both of us to watch.
Well, and this is where I suck about knowing actors' names, because I don't, but two actors in there, the guy who played Billy.
Brad Dourif.
Yes.
Yes.
Starred in that fabulous X-Files episode, Under the Sea, one of the best. I'm a huge X-Files fan, so don't be surprised if I'm always dropping that. And then the other guy, whose name I cannot remember, but he played the creepy twin in the circus episode. He was the one with the parasitic twin stuck into him, so any X-Files fans will know who that guy is. He was in there, too. I should probably, write down actors' names next time.
Oh, it's okay. You know, I mean, there's a... Yeah, we'll get it. Straight.
We'll get it.
And of course, there is the guy who I've seen him in a ton of stuff, but he's been in The Hills Have Eyes, the originals.
The guy
with the weird dome.
Oh, I read about that. Apparently, and I can't remember the name of it. It's an odd genetic condition where people are born without sweat glands and teeth.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, he's an actor. He's doing.
Is an actor, and he's doing very well.
Well, maybe he might be dead.
I think he's still alive.
Oh, okay.
He was in The X-Files too.
Yeah.
He did. He played like a. Saint? Was that the Saint episode? I don't know. Anyway, but Jack Nicholson was, of course, Jack Nicholson. He was great. And then the staff of the hospital was the good humor man. They're walking around and they're white.
You know, that's the 70s, you know. I mean, they back then, I'm sure each mental hospital had their own motif to do things that they had to, dress up back then. So that's how they looked. They looked like good humor men, you know. And,
yeah. Well, we also had the... which I think has become kind of a stereotype or a cliche of these type of movies where you have the mental patient, the main character who comes in and shakes up the mental hospital, that was played by Jack Nicholson. And of course you have your little cast of characters, but then you always have the one guy who everybody thinks can't talk, but who can, and who stands silently in the corner until the perfect moment when he says something. And that was played by Chief.
That was Chief.
Chief.
Who
if you read the book is actually narrated by Chief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is kind of one of the movies that probably set that standard for mental institution movies. And thematically, just from a thematic standpoint, it's one of those movies where I was thinking okay. Jack Nicholson's, is just trying to look for an easy way out, but, is he really crazy? Is he really not crazy?
Yeah. Well, that's true.
And,
No, I was going to say, because I think, here's something fun. I actually have a very expensive degree in creative writing, a graduate degree, and I've never read One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which I should have, so shame on me, but in the book, I think it's much more clear that he is faking it. But it's not very clear in the movie.
Well, because with Nicholson's acting, it's just here's the thing though, is that for somebody to say to realistically think that it would be easier to spend time in a mental institution as opposed to staying in prison.
Well, it was a work camp too.
It was a work camp, but I'm saying to say it's it'd be easier to debunk the system and hang out in a mental institution with people that, you know, you might be, you have to be kind of loony to begin with to think that as a plausible solution to a problem.
Yeah.
And I, because I mean, I wouldn't want, I mean, I've been, like, I have had friends that, you know, I have friend, one of my good friends, like, his, you know, his mother works in a mental institution, and I've visited his mother up there, you know, to, you know, whatever, for whatever reasons. And, you know, I've been up there, and you just see the people and just see the mood and just see the aura, and it's not something that, if you're not of the right frame of mind, or if you're of a normal, sane person, there's no reason at all for you to spend any time up there.
Yeah.
Because that's specifically meant for people that are, you know, maybe
a little off,
you know, and that is, or a lot of off.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really...
Maybe he just thought that he would be able to, like, lay around and play ping pong all day or something.
Well, and maybe if he just did that, he'd probably be better off.
Yeah.
You know, you think about it, if
you
just...
Well, he didn't, and that was the problem, because that was, again, going back to the whole, like, hey, you have the crazy patient who shakes everything up.
Yeah.
He's the one who decides, instead of just serving out his sentence, which is not very long, it's like 3 months or something.
Yeah,
it's not very long. He, instead of just, you know, shutting up and serving his sentence, he's got to be the guy who, like, breaks everybody out.
Well, because he's
fishing.
Bored.
Yeah, but come on, can't you just, like, do what Chief does and just shut up and stand in the corner? But, of course, then you wouldn't have a movie.
That's the thing, yeah. The movie was the one set in the corner.
If you did what I do, you would never have a movie.
the movie would just be called The One Who Sat in the Corner. One just, sat in the corner. And
Jen's really boring, the end. But by the way, just another thing that you should know for when Sean talks about, like, the thematic elements and stuff. He also has a very expensive graduate degree, but his is in film.
Yeah, well, film, media, arts, from a college.
Well, mine too.
Yeah, we went to the same
place. We went to the same place,
yeah,
whatever.
We're both happy. Okay.
Yeah, you still won't open your...
I won't look at it until I get a real job. I will not open my degree. It's still in the original wrapper.
Still in the envelope. Yeah,
still
in
the envelope. Yeah. So, but I mean, but it's from a screenplay standpoint. One thing that I really loved about it is that you are watching this movie. You're watching One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and you think to yourself, you know, there's nothing good is going to come of anything that's happening here. Specifically because, you know, Randolph, the, you know, Jack's character, is extremely volatile and just, you know, he's like I said, he's, you know, he's. He can't sit still, and he's bored, and so he's in this mental institution thinking he's just gonna coast, but he gets so antsy, and he has to go out and start doing all sorts of stuff and, like, breaking the inmates out of prison, out of the thing. And it's like, well, you know, it's just everything that he does. Yeah, everything that he does, you know, leads, you know, gets him one step closer to, you know...
What happens at the end.
Yeah, to pretty much being, you know... imprisoned for his entire life.
Well, and the other character that we should probably talk about too is Nurse Ratched, who that's also a big reference that I hear people throw around all the time is Nurse Ratched, because she's, let's be honest, she's kind of a bitch. She uses her position to basically boss everybody around. Mm-hmm. She's very, very happy to be the mother hen of all these inmates, and none of them like her very much, understandably so, and... Yeah. So, at the very end, I mean, I don't know if we should talk about the end. It's been out since 1975. I mean, how much of a spoiler is it
really? Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert, people, don't listen. But at the end, finally, Jack Nicholson's character gets so fed up with her because she's really mean. And she is making poor little Billy, who stutters horribly, who just lost his virginity... I don't know if she's a hooker or just some chick.
He was lost to one of his floozy friends, and basically...
That they just drag into a mental institution in the middle of the night. Long story. So, he finally says, and this is a very big part for him, that he finally says something to Nurse Ratched without a stutter. And it's the only line in the movie that he says without a stutter.
Mm-hmm.
And then she threatens to tell his mother, and his stutter comes right back. He gets very upset. He runs into the office... And he kills himself.
Yeah, and basically, you know, she tries to, you know, play damage control. But, like, you know, the thing is, I don't necessarily see her...
You know what the interesting thing, though? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the interesting thing about this, the difference between the movie and the book, and apparently the author of the book, who's Ken Kesey, I believe, was involved in making this movie at the very beginning.
Yeah.
But then he split for creative differences and refused to see this movie and said he hated it. That's sort of the story goes, according to Wikipedia. In the book, according to Wikipedia, again, Jack Nicholson's character strangles Nurse Ratched and actually does so much damage. She doesn't die, but takes away... I don't have it on there. He's looking at the bookshelf.
Okay.
And he does so much damage to her throat that he actually renders her mute.
Mm-hmm.
So she can't speak anymore.
Right.
And that does not happen in the movie. He does strangle her, but he doesn't do enough damage for her to stop talking, so everything just continues on as it was before.
Okay.
I don't know if that's the point of contention, because that's kind of a big deal, that she takes away basically what makes the men feel bad about themselves. He takes away her tool.
I don't know. Maybe, I mean, like I said, I haven't read the book, so I don't know, like, all of the, if there's any other points in the book that that he probably would have said, this is bullshit, I can't believe this, you know, whatever, so. But, I mean, I could see that being an issue. I mean, it really, that moment didn't really resonate with me as much. I mean, it was more of a moment for Randall's character to, you know, pretty much that's the one that broke the camel's back. So obviously, you know, after that happened, you know, he here's the spoiler, you know, he gets lobotomized, you know, and Chief, who, you know, has finally started talking to him.
And he's his friend.
Like, you know, there's kind of like this, you know, this pact between them that they were going to try to escape, you know, together. And Chief,
kills him.
Chief, you know, puts him out, you know, Jack puts, you know, Randall out of his misery and, you know, escapes himself. You know, which is pretty much how, you know, I mean, that particular moment about Nurse Ratched didn't really resonate with so much of me. And maybe that was something that could have been something where if you were a big fan of the book and the play, because it was also a play, you would also be like, well, oh, that was such an important part of this thing, so why it didn't translate? Like, why did they have to keep it going? Why couldn't she be a mute? Is that, you know, something that would have mattered to people? I mean, I don't know. But in the movie, it's like it didn't bother me. And maybe
because I think, you know, why is because it's followed by Billy's suicide, and for me, that was a bigger deal.
Yeah,
his suicide was a bigger deal than the result.
Okay.
Directly after, which was Nicholson's character strangling Nurse Ratched.
Yeah.
So I think in the book, because in the book apparently, again, according to Wikipedia, that wonderful news source, he strangles her and then he rips her shirt open, like exposing her breasts to everybody in the ward.
Okay.
Which, I mean, if you were going to write some sort of, you know, feminist thesis about that, you probably could. There's a wealth of, like, you know, how a woman is getting her voice taken away, blah, 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 blah. So you could go on forever about that, but that's not in the movie.
So yeah, it was a very minor... it was the same in the movie. It was, you know, obviously glossed over. And it's toned down. Which, even though, I mean, there's a lot of other things in that movie that are considerably, considerably more, you know, difficult to process. Not difficult, but I'm saying there's more, you know, more lewd, and, you know, just it being a movie about, you know, mental patients that are just, you know, they're not a very good mind, so they're all, you know, Jack Nicholson is just completely insane. You know, just being Jack and just being this. Completely,
probably on cocaine.
Yeah, or just basically just being a character, just being a person that he indulges in all of his whims and he doesn't care about authority, and you know, that's how it ends up. And he ends up it's kind of sad in the end that's how it ends up. You know, for him that he's somebody that he's just trying to make a difference, make a positive difference for these people in this institution, people that he's never even known. You know, so
sorry, that was my tweet deck. I thought I turned it off.
You have to close it.
I did. I thought I quit.
You have to quit.
I did.
No, you closed.
There we go. Now it's quit. Sorry. So anyway, any favorite parts of the movie?
Actually, I mean, there's a lot. I can't really define something favorite about it, but I did really enjoy it as a whole. Although I felt it was too long.
Yeah,
and I tried to. I was kind of because it's like two and a half hours, just about. And, you know, I mean, it's one of those things where it's worth it, but it's not.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, you probably could have trimmed out some stuff, but that's just, you know, that's just how they do it. Yeah. You know, that's how they did it back then. It's the 70s. It's a classic. You can't really deny it.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite parts was just in this, again, it could have just been because it was a 70s movie, but, like, Jack Nicholson, like, the first time you see him, he's in this, like, black leather jacket symbolizing rebel, and then you see him again later on, and he's got his cigarettes rolled up in the sleeve of his T-shirt.
Yeah.
Again, rebel. I thought that was pretty funny. I love the Good Humor Men. That really cracked me up. Just because they really did. I kind of wanted ice cream after seeing that movie.
Yeah. I wrote a bunch of really scribbled notes in here. But
yeah, I think one of my notes says rebel in, like, big letters with an exclamation point.
I wrote one of my favorite notes in here says, Danny DeVito, pervert in every role.
I told you, sex obsessed. What am I saying?
Yeah,
well, I love Danny DeVito.
Yeah, no, he's...
He just makes me so happy.
He's fantastic. I mean, everybody in this movie is fantastic.
It's a good movie.
It's a classic. I mean, that obviously it won 5 Oscars, the big 5 Oscars, you know, so there's really no reason to say, you know, you can't say really anything bad about it other than maybe...
It's too long.
Other than maybe it's too long, and if you were a fan of the book and you're like, this didn't translate well, who cares?
Yeah. I think, all right, so I guess, would I say see the movie? Yes.
Well, you should see all these movies.
Well, of course you should, but I mean, like, my personal review of it, do I think you should see this movie? Yeah, I think you should probably see the movie, but do it on a day when you don't have anything else to do, because again, long movie.
Have a day, if you got a day off, if you're homesick from work and you have Netflix, or you just have it sitting around and never seen it, might as well pop it in.
If the internet bores you, like that Kyle Kinane bit,
yes,
where he talks about the internet boring him, Kyle Kinane's a great comic. If you don't know who he is, look him up, listen to his stuff. He's fantastic. Buy his album.
I would definitely.
If you're bored with the internet, watch the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Hellraiser.
Hellraiser.
See, Hellraiser.
Yeah,
there's
a transition for you.
I got a lot more to say about Hellraiser.
Fantastic, or One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, classic movie on AFI's list. I don't even know what number it is. I should go get the sheet.
I had the sheet.
Yeah, it's on the coffee table.
Go get it. So, but Hellraiser is... Okay. See, now Hellraiser is one of these movies, like, I bought it, and I've been wanting to see it for years.
Well, you're a big horror fan. Well,
I'm a big horror dude, you know, and I've always been kind of, like, I've always been fascinated with, you know, older horror movies that you don't, because if they don't make any sense to you, then you have to see it. You know, that's the thing. It's a fringe element. It's something, but it's also something that a lot of people have embraced. So it's not really like, it's a cult status. And the thing about, you know, about Hellraiser is that, like, it wasn't it didn't make any ton of money. You know, it didn't make a lot of money, but since, you know, because of VHS, and just because of Pinhead, the character Pinhead, which I'm sure most people...
Who is awesome, by the way.
Yeah, he's awesome. And, I mean, it's a movie that is very, you know, it's well-quoted, it's well-versed amongst, you know, horror fans and metal fans and everything. So, basically, yeah, you have to give it its props, and it does not make... It's not on the AFI list, which...
No,
it's no 33.
Well, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is number 33 on the 2007 AFI list of the top 100 movies of all time.
Yes.
And you can find that online. It's very easy to find. And Hellraiser doesn't rank up there. Dialogue in Hellraiser, not the best.
Well,
cheesy 80s horror movie.
Well, no, I'm actually gonna have to take it to task more, because first of all, I'm going to say maybe this was Clive Barker's first attempt at a screenplay. He's translating his own work. Hellraiser, it's also based on a book.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on his novella, The Hellbound Heart, which he, from what I was reading on Wikipedia, that...
Our favorite source.
Yeah. Well, that's what you do when you don't know something about it. You go to Wikipedia and you believe it. So,
because the internet doesn't lie.
Yeah, well,
ever.
Not ever. But, but basically, you know, I guess he did one of his other stories was translated to film and he wasn't happy with it, so he ended up doing his own version of one of his books, or one of his stories. And, what was that?
I should have got the chill pack.
Oh, are we having problems?
No, not right now, but next time we do this. The chill pack, fantastic invention that actually cools your computer down when you do things like this. And it was invented by Dean Haglund, who...
is in X-Files.
Was on the X-Files. And the guy, played Langley with the long hair. Anyway, continue on. Which I got for Christmas.
Yay.
Sorry.
I give good gifts.
Yes, I got a chill pack.
So, yeah, so anyways, no, it's based on one of his stories. And I've never read the story.
I've never read any of his work.
Never read any of his work. I've seen.
I love horror, but I've never read any of his.
I've seen, you know, only other Clive Barker movie that I've seen straight through was Midnight Meat Train.
I've never seen that either.
Which is.
There's another one I haven't seen.
Well, it's pretty good. I sat down. It's actually pretty good. But I mean, this particular Hellraiser. Okay, Hellraiser. It's a cheesy horror movie. Because it was made as a cheesy horror movie. It was made for barely a budget. Like, a lot of the money that they had to raise for it had to go into the special effects. Just from, you know, researching the background about it, about the, you know, production of it, is that, you know, there was a lot, you know, they only had so much they can do with as far as, you know, camera movements and stuff. So, like, a lot of it was filmed in just a house, and there was only a lot of the same angles are used. There's really not a lot in terms of, like, anything groundbreaking in terms of cinematography. Or, I mean, maybe there is. I mean, it's just, you know, but they did the best they could. And I think it's great. I had a chance to really think about it, you know, I watched it last night. And it made a lot of sense to me. As far as just why it is what it is and why it is so appreciated.
I mean, I enjoyed it a lot. I remember when it... You know, when, maybe not when it came out, because it came out in pretty much the middle of the 80s.
87.
Oh, yeah, no, I do remember when it came out. So, as a child of the 80s, I remember a lot of people talking about Hellraiser.
Mm-hmm.
All through my, you know, my elementary school, middle school, and high school career, everybody always talked about Hellraiser, especially because I was a little goth girl, so Hellraiser always got thrown around. Never saw it. Because of all things, I was actually not allowed to watch R-rated movies until I was of age, thanks to my mother.
Mm-hmm.
Even though my father would sneak us down to see, like, Alien and stuff. But he wasn't a horror fan.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't watch horror movies, so I never saw this movie.
Yes, yeah. In my childhood, you know, I saw, like, pretty much all of the Friday the 13th movies.
Yeah, I've never seen the Friday the 13th movie.
When I was in, like...
There you go.
When
There's
I was, like,
something we have to review.
Yeah, when I was, like... Well, I've seen them all. So when I was, like, 8, you know, I was already seeing those movies and... You know, there's tits and blood and massacres and...
Which I love.
Teens fucking and just all that great stuff. And, you know, when I was young, I was like, well, that's what I do. You know, it's my dad. You know, he comes, they come home and, you know, he brings home a movie from the video store and we'd see, you know, just like some of these really violent movies. And
yeah, no, my dad would make me watch like old war movies. So like Das Boot, I've seen Das Boot like 900 times. Zulu, I can't tell you how many times I've seen Zulu. But as far as, like, great horror movies like Hellraiser, I never got a chance to watch any of them because I was too young and my mom wouldn't let me.
Yeah. No, so. But Hellraiser is one of the ones, for some reason...
It's great.
It slipped my radar, or my parents, at least my parents' radar, because I've always saw, like, you know, I remember watching, like, you know, wrestling and, like, in between, like, they would have commercials for the Hellraiser movie, like, you know, on wrestling. You know, not on wrestling, but like, you know, between the, you know, the segments, and just like you'd see it, and it just kind of would, it's something you just didn't quite get it, you know. It's just, I didn't understand, like, why has this guy got these pins on his face? Like, what's wrong with his head? What's this about? And it took me a while.
Which is such a great look, though.
Oh, it is. It's a fantastic look. I mean, he's a real. He almost. I was saying another Wikipedia fact. He almost didn't take. That role. Well, he wanted that role. Doug Bradley, the guy that plays Pinhead, was going to do. He was either between him or one of the movers that was moving stuff into the house. And basically, he ended up taking the Pinhead role and chomps off the stardom. So I guess we should talk about the premise here a little bit.
Oh, yeah, talk about the actual movie.
Because basically, Hellraiser revolves around a box called the Lament Configuration, which is a puzzle of some kind that. If you press it, and once you open it, it's kind of like a Pandora's box. It unleashes...
It's a possessed Rubik's Cube.
A possessed Rubik's Cube that unleashes another dimension where these demons called the Cenobites come and take you into basically a world of...
Torture
and hell. But it's also, if you're... It's like a sadomasochist kind of deal. So it's also, like, if you're really into, like, extreme pleasure and pain, you know, this is where... It's, you know, this is, like...
This is where it's at for
you. This is a vacation. This is like a cruise ship for you, you know? And so you go and you mess with this thing and you take you away. And basically it starts off with this guy, Frank, who, you know, gets to hold this box and ends up being taken away and...
Killed
and, you know, mutilated. But what happens is his brother and his wife...
move into the house where he was killed, should be what? I think it's their mother's house.
I think it's okay. I think it's their mother's
house. Their mother's or their grandmother's house. Somehow it's in the family, and they, like, move into it.
They decide it's a good idea.
Yeah, it's a whatever, I get it. His wife's kind of weird.
Well, the funny thing is like, you know, they're supposed to be, like, a pretty good, well-off financial family, you know, financial deal. Like, each of them have, you know, good jobs. But they decide that, you know, to save money, you know, they should maybe move into this terrible house of just nothing but, like, rusty nails and...
Oh, in some sort of unidentified American place. Like, they never say where they go. They say they came from Brooklyn, but they never say where they
are. It's supposed to be big. It's kind of like they moved to Springfield.
Yeah.
You know? But,
so they moved to Springfield into Ned Flanders' house. Which actually would make sense.
Actually, looks more like Principal Skinner's house.
Really?
I don't know, because he has...
Actually, that would make sense, too. Because his mother's kind of a demon.
Yeah, so they move into this house, and basically, you know, as we learn, you know,
Frank was killed in the attic.
Frank was killed in the attic, but Frank's...
Essence
is still there, and, God, what's it? His brother's wife, Julia.
Oh, yeah, Julia.
Julia had an affair with him.
On top of her wedding dress. Bang, Frank.
It was a week before the wedding, and she's
some reason, her wedding dress is laying on a bed, and then Frank comes over, and she's like, oh, you're all wet. Oh, we should have sex on my wedding dress, because I'm not going to move it out of the way.
Well, why would it? It's already out. I'm just going to air it out before the wedding.
I'm going to leave it on this bed.
I guess that's what you... I don't know.
Apparently, they don't have cats.
That's
no
good.
Cat hair on that dress.
No, that would have been a funny... That's the movie I want to see, is the you know, her trying to get the cat hair out the wedding dress. Like, maybe if I fuck on it...
the cat won't go on it anymore.
Maybe he won't like it, because it'll be all full of man stains.
Gross.
So,
yeah, that'll be cute walking down the aisle.
It's like,
why do you have stains all over the back of that dress?
She's wearing slightly beige. This is disgusting.
Splattered beige. It's an abstract art piece.
So she ends up, you know, there's a history between them. So what happens is, as they're moving in this, Andrew?
I don't know.
The actor's name is Andrew, whatever. His name is...
Frank's brother.
Not Frank from Always Sunny, but Frank.
One day, I will actually write all these things down.
I probably should have wrote notes.
Yeah, no, I didn't do that.
We just saw it last night.
Yeah, I know.
So it's fresh in our head.
Yes.
So, anyways.
Except for names. With names.
So...
Frank's brother
is moving in, and he accidentally, like...
There's this huge, giant nail that's, like, sticking out, like, 9,000 inches, and he cuts his hand on it, and then... Instead of running into a bathroom like one would do, he runs upstairs to where his wife is in the attic where Frank died, thinking about fucking Frank on her wedding dress.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes in and he's like, oh, my hand, oh, my God. And then
because he's screaming for blood, so he basically walks into her.
He bleeds all over the place.
Yeah, he bleeds all over the place and the blood
goes... On the floor.
Blood goes into the floor. He ends up fucking, you know, ends up nourishing... Apparently the blood nourishes Frank's embryo, which is still for some reason...
I don't know if it's an embryo.
That's what they describe it as. I've read is an embryo. Like, he's kind of like his essence of his embryo. Like, there's something like
kind
some sort
like
of
a spider web.
Some sort of reproductive sac is under there, and it ends up nourishing him, so he regenerates from the floor into like this gross, you know, pulpy mess.
Kind of like a zombie in Walking Dead.
Yeah, pretty much. And he becomes a pulpy mess, and like he sees Julia. You know, Julia sees him. And, you know, he convinces her, he's like, I need you bring men to this house so
or,
we can...
He doesn't actually specify men. He just says he needs blood. And then she goes out and starts finding men.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because she's thinking about killing the daughter. At the very beginning. At the party.
Yeah.
So she thinks about it, but then the daughter's boyfriend, I don't remember the daughter's name. Kaylee?
Christy. Christy Cotton.
Christy's kind of drunk. She's going to come up the stairs, and the stepmother's standing there looking creepy, and they look at each other, and you get this feeling that she's thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But then the boyfriend interrupts.
Yeah.
So then she goes out and she starts acting like a high-class hooker at hotel bars to try to pick up businessmen.
Which, with her 1987...
Awesome sunglasses.
Awesome sunglasses and Ozzy Osbourne hair.
Yeah, she wears, the Ray-Bans from that movie with Tom Cruise in it.
Top Gun.
No, Risky Business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's out there and she's hooking it up and she's, she brings a bunch of schlubs home, hits it with a hammer, and basically, from what you gather, he takes the blood, because the blood nourishes it. The blood apparently is enough. I don't know how it. I mean, blood of course is the life source of your body.
Right.
You know, runs through your veins. So apparently he needs as much of it as possible in order to keep regenerating. And I guess that is maybe some sort of genetic, some sort of defect that in the manual of the Lamed configuration and the Cenobites that you're able to regenerate with that stuff.
But the question is though, is he, for me, because eventually, you know, he takes Frank takes his brother's skin. And he wears it so he looks like
him. Well, that's at the end, but he's just doing that to, like, you know, as a...
Yeah, but is that what he's doing to the other guys? Like,
no, he's just draining their blood, and it's, like, nourishing...
Why did he take Frank's skin? Frank's brother's skin?
Because he wanted to do it so he could, like, trick Christy into thinking that, you know...
Or trick the Cenobites, too, maybe?
Also try to distract the Cenobites, and they... Because at the end, you know, they come for him finally, and they decide to... You know, they say, we need the man who did this, and...
Yeah, because there's this nasty, bloody body
which is that, which is, you know, Christy's dad, and, you know, Frank's, you know, down there wearing, you know, his brother's mask, brother's face, and, you know, eventually, you know, everything, you know...
Because what happens is that Christy finds out what's going on before the whole wearing the brother thing. So Christy finds out what's going on because she follows... She's going to go talk to her stepmother because her father had approached her and said, oh, she doesn't even want to leave the house anymore. Could you just please be nice to her? So she goes and she sees her stepmother bringing home poor schlub number 3. And she catches them.
Yeah, all
hell breaks loose. So she gets shoved in the room with Frank and grabs the box.
Yeah. Grabs the box, takes it, and next thing you know, it's like...
She opens it on accident.
And summons the Cenobites, and they want her. I mean...
They want her. She says, oh, I'll trade you for Frank. They do. Frank's dead. Julia's dead. Father's dead. But, of course, then the Cenobites are not going to honor this, because they're demons.
Yes.
So they're going to come after her.
Right. And what happens is, though, it's actually, since the puzzle, she reverses the puzzle, which is how she's able to, like, get rid of the Cenobites. And that's how, at the end, you know, she defeats, you know, all the goofy monsters.
Well, can we talk about the goofy monsters for a minute? Because as we've already discussed, Pinhead, awesome.
Yeah.
Great look. Looks fantastic. Even Vagina Throat Guy. The Vagina Throat Guy basically has, like, a big old slit in his throat that kind of looks like a vagina.
Uh-huh.
It's gross. So there's him. He looks pretty cool. There's kind of like, I don't know if it... He kind of looks like an alien with his, like, because he's got the teeth and he chatters.
Yeah, it's a chatter. They have names for each of them.
I don't know who designed it, because it kind of looks like a Giger ripoff, like an H.R. Giger ripoff of Aliens, because he has that face and he...
I'm sure there was probably some influence there.
Yeah. And so he's pretty cool. But then you have Fat Blob Man, which is lame. I don't like Fat Blob Man because it's... Not because he's fat, I don't care. The reason I don't like Fat Blob Man is because he insists on wearing these, like, Anna Wintour sunglasses that when he gets ready to kill you, he takes off and his eyelids are sewn shut. Not a big deal. I don't know why he's hiding them, because he's walking around with Pinhead and Vagina Throw Man.
I don't know, maybe...
Shouldn't he be terrifying the whole time?
Maybe he's just a fan of Bono and he likes having those glasses.
Perhaps.
Maybe. Who knows? I mean, they're
maybe it is homage to their lord, Bono.
Lord Bono, the lead Cenobite.
Maybe he just does good things, but he's really a...
He has a little iPod full of, like, you know, the October album.
Maybe that's it. Maybe if you descend into hell and you're ready to meet Satan,
we'll be with you.
It's Bono
again.
Sitting there on the throne, and all they do is just play U2 for the rest of eternity.
That could be it. Maybe that's while they're ripping you with hooks.
He's like, I like orphans, but I don't like you.
Maybe while they're ripping you with hooks, they're playing Zooropa. And you're just like, oh, well, this sucks.
God damn it, if I hear Bloody Sunday one more time.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, but actually, there's some things about this movie that I was talking about this with somebody today, and I brought this up last night, that the sleaze in this movie.
Oh, it's awesome.
It's awesome because.
Because it's 80s sleaze.
Because it's 80s sleaze, but for some reason, like, the sleaze in the 80s is considerably worse to hear now than sleaze in the 90s.
Or even today.
So, like, say if you're... I mean, because, say, like, you could watch, like, some sleazy movie or a sleazy show on... Let's say, like, Always Sunny. Says, you know, Frank says something sleazy.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
Yeah.
But, like, when... There's a scene where they're moving in, and one of the movers... Okay, so Christy walks in, and she's like, "Hey, Dad, I'm here." And then the movers are moving in this bed, and one of the movers just goes, "Hey, my lucky day."
Yeah, it's really creepy.
Which is like, okay, that's just a throwaway comment. It's just a guy just saying something because he's a dude. But that's really creepy.
It is really creepy.
In front of, like, the girl's father, you know, just saying, I mean, and the thing is, what's even more conservative is that the girl doesn't say anything. Like, she just kind of, like, brushes it off because, you know, it's a movie, so obviously if they spent, like, 20 minutes just her being like, "That's sexual harassment, I can't take this anymore."
Not only that, but just, like, making some sort of snarky little comment, which really wasn't a thing back then.
But that's probably why it's so creepy, is because it goes unresponded. Like,
somebody would have probably responded to it had it been written today.
Yeah.
She would have said some sort of, like, really biting, sarcastic remark, and he would have looked sad.
He would have said something, and then, you know, she would have, you know, just emasculated him, and then he probably...
And everybody would have laughed.
And then he would have fell into some pudding, and it would have been some goofy film, and then she would have been... And then some, like, pop song would have played, and... Yeah, it would have been the same. But see, he just says it, and she just rolls her eyes, and that's it.
Yeah, maybe because there is no snark in the 80s, really.
Well, snark in the 80s, that was the snark, you know, but it was so underplayed that's why it's so great. You know,
yeah.
And there's something to say, just little things like that. Just like little things like that, you know?
I think what was kind of ridiculous, though, is like, oh, the homeless guy.
Yes, Captain Jack Rob Zombie.
Or Joaquin Phoenix.
Joaquin Phoenix.
Doing his awesome documentary role. But instead of sticking gum under Letterman's desk, he was eating crickets in a pet store.
Well, I just think because they're apparently remaking this movie.
Which,
they're trying...
fucking Hollywood, stop it. Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
well,
okay.
Well, I think this has pretty much been said by everybody else.
No,
but yeah.
It has. But I mean, seriously, I think everybody feels this way, and I don't know, I'm just going to add my voice to it.
Yeah.
Fucking stop it. Anyway, go ahead.
No, everything doesn't need to be remade. And,
agreed. Some
Hellraiser,
probably.
Hellraiser, Hellraiser's the same thing about Hellraiser. It's already been well-reviewed. You know, it's already a cult film. Why, you know, and enough people know about it, I think, that it doesn't need to be done again.
Yeah. No, so, everybody knows Pinhead.
Yeah, I mean, because here's one thing. They remade Fright Night. I can understand that because I knew about Fright Night.
Yeah, but you're a horror guy.
I don't know. Yeah, the same. But it's a cult movie, but not like everybody really knows about. I think more people know about like Pinhead. They know about, you know, Hellraiser. They know because there's been like 7 sequels.
Well, yeah.
So I mean, you know, it makes sense that, you know, you would. It doesn't make any sense. Actually, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, Fright Night only had 2 movies. You know, it's been like over 20 years since they made the last one. You know, why not do it again? You know, Pinhead, you know, I mean, or Hellraiser, like, the last one they did was probably, you know, almost, like, in, you know, 2000 or whatever.
Yeah.
Probably even sooner. You know, there's been, like, 7 sequels. So why? It's still fresh. The point I was going to make is that they're going to make this movie, and I think that maybe that's the role that Joaquin Phoenix is actually trying to, like...
What, the crazy?
Yeah, you know,
That is some serious dedication to a... Maybe 5 minutes of screen time when you walk around as the crazy homeless man and chew on crickets.
He's the same.
And then take the box at the end. Oh, he turns into a bone dragon. A skeleton dragon. And he flies away with the box in his hand. Because, I don't know, at the very, very end, spoiler alert, everybody, Christy lives and then she and her little boyfriend try to burn the box. Because, you know, that would work.
Well, there is a sequel. And,
so she's like, oh, fire will kill this possessed demon thing. No. But she throws it in the fire, and homeless crazy man who had been scaring her the whole movie in little tiny pieces shows up, shoves his hand in a fire, bursts into flames, and becomes a stone or a bone dragon thing who then flies away. So you know there's going to be a sequel.
Yes.
But, yeah, it was Walking Phoenix, anyway.
Yeah, no, that was completely ridiculous.
Yes.
Yeah, so I don't know. That's but I would if I had to review it and say people need to see it. I think you need to see it.
Yeah, I'd agree.
At least see the first one. Like maybe see the first two. I try to start watching the second one, and I think it gives more background into. It actually does give a background as to how Pinhead becomes Pinhead.
That's cool.
Just a little bit of that, like because
yeah, I'd watch the second one. Like I said, I haven't seen any of them.
And I think maybe
except the first.
Yeah, and I think maybe in the future, you know, they give some more ideas as to how like. You know, there's the fat guy, or what's his face? Butterball.
What was that his name?
That's his name. There's Butterball and Chatterbox, and then there's, like, the female Cenobite, which I think is kind of, like, the androgynous, like...
The vagina throat one?
Vagina? Is it the one with the... It's the one that's walking up the
stairs.
It's
got, like, the kind of, like, big... Like, thing yeah. sticking out of, out of the face. It kind of looks like Pinhead, but only with pins sticking out of the cheeks that kind of go down in, like, a big old sad face.
Okay, I think that's a female.
Which holds open the throat vagina.
Her throat vagina, that's where her vagina is on her throat.
Fantastic.
So she, so apparently she's the one, you know, they have, like, backgrounds and everything like that. So, and I think it's basically...
I don't care about that.
But basically what happens is you find this box and you become, like, a Cenobite. Or you could become. I think there's like a certain amount of training you have to go through. I'm pretty sure the sequels. I'm sure if I see all of 10 million of them, I'll understand.
I don't know if I care enough to see all 10 million.
I'm intrigued. I think I'm on board.
I watched the second one, but that doesn't mean I'll watch the third.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I want to see all of them. I want to see. I think we're just gonna have to make this a Hellraiser podcast.
All Hellraiser?
All Hellraiser, all the time. Our theme music's going to be Hellraiser by Ozzy Osbourne. And it's going to be...
We're going to get Vagina Throat Guy.
Vagina Throat
Guy's going
to be a guest. You know,
let's get some guests on here. Because honestly, now that we have a podcast, we don't have a podcast until Jon Hamm has guested.
Yeah, well, if Jon Hamm plays Vagina Throat Guy in the remake of...
Dude, I'd totally watch that.
If he just walks in, as long as he has the Don Draper hair.
Because really, he would just be like, I'm devastatingly handsome even with Vagina Throat.
It's the role he's been born to play.
It's true.
After working so hard, he's just like,
working so hard in
he's
Hollywood.
Just
he's
throw
like,
it
the
all
only
away.
Thing I ever wanted was to be that dude in Hellraiser.
Jon Hamm's just gonna throw it all away and play Vagina Throat in Hellraiser 2K11. It's gonna be great.
Man, there should be like a Hellraiser versus Freddy versus Jason movie. Versus Michael.
Well, Robot Chicken did something like that, like a Big Brother, like horror person knockoff, like, and they all lived in a house together.
Oh, that's awesome! I haven't seen that.
And like all Michael Myers did was stab. It was pretty funny.
Does he say stab?
No, he doesn't say
damn
anything.
It.
No,
I was just, hoping it was
no,
just
like,
stab, like stab.
Like he's just like Freddy's talking to him. It's like Michael, why'd you eat all the things? He just goes stab, stab, stab.
Kind of like that robot on Futurama that just stabs everybody. He's like, yeah. Stab, stab.
He doesn't even say anything. He just goes. Mm-hmm. Oh. Looks like I'm stabbing but jerking off. Okay.
Yeah. There's no, like, video. They can't see what you're doing.
Yeah. On that note...
I
think we've reached the end. I think we did it.
We've gone over quite
a lot of time here.
Jesus Christ. I hope you all listened to the end of this. So that is the end of our very first podcast, Haven't Seen It, featuring One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Hellraiser. Check us out on haven'tseenit.tumblr.com. You can email us at haven'tseenit@gmail.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jen Stansfield.
And I'm on Twitter at Angry Hero Sean, S-A-J-W-N.
So check us out, and thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.